Welcome to Soap, a story of the Tates and the Campbells, whose normal life is anything but normal, with co-hosts Tom Diamond, Vicky Ray, Jesse Fultz, and Keith Chalgo. Soap operas come and go, but there has never been a soap opera like Soap.
Everybody, welcome back to the Literary License Podcast, and today we are still covering our retrospective of Soap, the sitcom, Season 1, Episodes 9 through 16. Today we have Tom Diamond with us. Say hello, Tom.
Hello, everybody. I've crawled over from the dark shadows crypt once again. It gives me a lot of exercise, and I've said hello to the crypt keeper on the way. Hello there, all of you. We're back. So thank you very much for inviting me.
I've high-fived the crypt keeper a couple times the last 2 months myself. And we have his kingship, Keith Chalgo, his liege.
Yes. may I be with you?
A nice dude. Like that. That's all.
And we've got myself, Vicky Ray. And before we get started, we like to see what's going on with everybody since the last time we spoke. So let's see. Tom, what have you been doing?
I don't mind telling you, actually, I didn't get a chance since last week when we taped the Dark Shadows podcast. But as you guys both know, and I don't mind telling the world, I'm getting over a very mild case of COVID. And thank goodness it could have been a lot worse. I just had minor flu symptoms. I did have something called brain fog for 24 hours, which I wouldn't wish on anybody. I could not put two sentences together during that period of time. But that passed, thankfully, and I'm just tired now. I'm experiencing fatigue. But other than that, I'm trying to get back on the horse and getting a lot of sleep. And
Vitamins,
or as Keith goes, vitamins.
Vitamins, you know, that's yes. Very lots important. Of vitamins.
Pronounce it the way it should be pronounced, you know. And
well, a lot of people go through brain fog, isn't that right, Vicky?
Yeah, all the time. Piss off, Keith. I do get brain fog. It's called fibro.
Is that as opposed to Phineas Fogg from
God.
Days, you know,
I try to get brain fog when I see his little whatever he's done put on Instagram and in the podcast
around
pages
the
lately.
World in 80
at days. My expense.
Well, we've updated our pictures on our front page on our
website. That was funny.
Oh God, which one are we talking about?
Is the WW page.
Yeah, www.llpodcast.com. Oh, and remember to sign up for our newsletter, people.
Put that plug in there, Keith.
Do it in the announcer's voice. Now sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah. Well,
really good.
You didn't tell me what you're up to.
But that's me. So what am I up to? So I'm getting back on the horse and I took a few weeks off from school. I am now back on the schoolwork again, looking forward maybe doing a couple of guest lecture shots at a local university.
Cool.
Online this semester. I'm trying to get that, trying to get that finalized as a guest lecturer. And then hopefully I'll be doing some teaching assistant or adjunct work starting in the summer.
All right.
And we'll see what happens other than that.
Is that going to be in person?
No, it's all virtual. Oh, except there's one job I did apply for. I don't know whether I'm going to be called, but in Boca, which is near where I live, and that would be in person if they decided to take me. And that is like it's a short drive from where I am, so I wouldn't mind. And we'll see what happens. I'm not killing myself right now. I've got to get
worry about it for a while.
I've got to get over this.
Take your time, get healthy.
Thank you. Thank you. Much appreciated.
What about you, my liege? What have you been up to?
Been watching. I'm up to date with Money Heist or Casa de Papel, which is a Spanish series, which on Netflix, and I urge everyone to see it. It's one of the most
shows.
Money Heist. It's the most watched show ever on Netflix, with over a billion people who've seen it so far. It's made so much money for them, and it's such an the last seasons should be out later on this year.
How did I let this one get by me?
Isaac's never seen it. I mean, I watched it. I was up to about season three.
Isaac like it? But,
yeah, we watched it from the beginning again, and I mean, I was in love with it all over again. It's exciting. So that's really good. I urge people to watch that. It's about rising up against politics, about the resistance.
Uh-oh.
Resist!
it's very interesting, and the thing is, you think that it's a plain old money heist, but it's so much more than that. So that's really good. And then I started watching on Disney Plus a show called WandaVision, which is from the Marvel, and
Marvel
it's quite interesting. I mean, the first, I'm not familiar with. I'm not a big fan of Marvel. I'm more of a DC comic kind of guy.
Right. Me too.
But it's quite interesting. There's something askew going on, and from what I can understand, I've seen there's three episodes. I think the fourth one's on. I'll probably watch that this weekend. But they're stuck in like a TV show, and the first one's done like Bewitched.
Really?
And like the black and white, and then it's like done like a 1950s, 1960s type of TV show, and then the third episode. Something happens and they find everything going into color and they're a bit freaked out, but now they find themselves into like a 1970s Brady Bunch show.
That's on Disney, right? Because I saw that they put out something for Marvel, and I love Marvel comics.
Interesting.
So I just kind of cruised right past that one.
On Saturday Night Live, a long time ago, they had a skit, and I think it was with Ricky Nelson was the guest starring, and he wound up in it was a similar kind of thing that he kept traveling to different sitcoms in different periods. And so he was in Ozzie and Harriet at once. Then he was in Father Knows Best, and he didn't know how he got there.
Oh, no
way.
He went
to the Twilight Zone, and he didn't know how he got there, you know, and he was going from one to the other. So this sounds like that, but it's very interesting. I think that's a very interesting idea with the Wanda thing, Keith, huh?
Yeah, I'm going to have to check it out. I never know what's like age appropriate for Asher. Sometimes those kind of get a little...
It's pretty much age appropriate. There's nothing violent or gory yet.
I'm not going to let him watch The Boys.
And, the Boys are quite very adult themed. I'm intrigued by it. Let's put it that way. So I'm not sure what's going on. But I've said before, I didn't watch any of the Marvel films or anything like that. And apparently, it's a continuation.
I thought you liked Marvel comics.
I'm a Spider-Man fan, but.
Right.
You know, but after like three versions of the first Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Within five, 10 years. Yeah,
I agree with that. They've kind of overdone Spider-Man. I love the Wonder Woman.
I was DC. I couldn't stand.
That's DC. Is that DC or Wonder
Woman?
No.
Wonder Woman
is, Wonder Woman is DC. Wonder Woman
it is,
DC,
yeah. I love all them, though. I think they've done really good with Wonder Woman.
I hated it.
Didn't see the last one yet.
But you can never top Linda Carter.
No, I know. She's always going to be the Wonder Woman. You know what it is?
Is because she was so personable. And the thing is, you felt like you could be her best friend.
Everybody's dream.
Yeah. She was, to be honest, how
she's
she stayed
gorgeous.
In that outfit running around with... Before tit tape, and she still stayed in that outfit is beyond me. But
I don't know how she did it. She must have had that shit glued on.
I don't know.
It had to have been glued somehow.
She was in some soft porn, as I remember before when she was.
She was a Miss America.
Oh, well, she was Miss America, but Miss before America. Then.
That's the other one you're thinking of.
You're thinking about Vanessa Williams.
Is it Vanessa Williams?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I watched the 1984 one. It's okay.
Yeah.
I watched the previous one of Wonder Woman.
I didn't see it yet.
And it was okay. I mean, my only problem is that I think with Wonder Woman, I think when you're spoiled by the TV show, even though it was cheesy, the TV show, but when she was dying of Prince, and when she turned into Wonder Woman sort of thing. But there's something very, very likable about her. It's like you wanted to be her best friend. And I think that with this Wonder Woman,
she looked
like
so wholesome and girl next doorish, even with the, you know.
Yeah. Well, and this Wonder Woman is lacking that kind of, you know, you want to identify with her.
Personable.
I mean, with Batman, the Batman one, you can, you know, identify with Batman. I always had problems with Superman anyway. I thought for me, for Superman, it's like, you know, if you're Superman, just get rid of all the kryptonite and you'll be fine. But yeah, you know, that's only Nick.
There's always a small bit of kryptonite wherever you go.
I know. And it's always like Luther that has it.
When I was a kid, that one of the first ones, and I didn't know how to pronounce it, and I pronounced it kryptonite instead of kryptonite, which, because you pronounce things the way you see them. Right. But I was going to say about Linda Carter, that she was in the recent DC Supergirl. She portrayed the alien president. The president.
Really?
Discovered she was an alien, and it was an interesting.
She's still beautiful to this day.
She's still got it.
She's aged like fine wine. That woman has.
She's a good singer as well, though.
That's interesting.
She's had a couple albums out as well.
I never knew that. That's interesting.
Well, I didn't know Christopher Lee did heavy metal album until Joe told us the other day. Told me. I didn't know he did all that stuff.
Well, he did opera too. He had a beautiful operatic voice, Christopher Lee.
Yeah, I saw, and I was listening to one of the Facebook groups. And they were talking about it in there too. Christopher Lee did a rock album. He did all kinds of stuff. Oh, I had no clue.
Like William Shatner albums.
William Shatner. No.
Leonard Nimoy.
Bilbo Baggins. Oh my God, that song, Bilbo Baggins. Don't ever get high and listen to that song. You will never be the same.
To be honest, though, the last William Shatner albums have been really good because he's had people like Joe Jackson and Ben Folds and Pulp and people like that backing him, and they've done a really good job with them. I quite enjoyed them.
I've heard some of them where he's talking. I saw the video. He's got a cigarette and he's just talking through his song
when he's doing MacArthur Park or something like that. I mean, MacArthur Park is probably one of the worst lyrical songs ever. I mean, someone left the cake out in the rain and it took so long to bake it. I don't know if I can make that recipe again. Whoa. Not the most intelligent lyrics.
I think
it was Richard Harris that had a hit with that song to begin with before Donna Summer turned into a disco hit.
But, yeah.
Other than that, I started watching the 90s Showtime show Queer as Folk again, which is, it still lives up. It's quite a fun show to watch. So,
right.
A lot of sex, but it's good.
Yeah, well, can't have enough sex.
I've been catching up on reruns of My Favorite Martian, actually, myself, which I thought was really well written, at the time they did it. And, I'm very retro right now. L.A. Law, I just started watching, which I never saw. I still can't believe Susan Day has gotten, you know, I mean, I'm used to her from the Partridge Family. Mm-hmm. And it's a completely, frankly, I don't know. There must be LA Law fans out there, so I don't want to say anything.
There's always LA Law.
But I don't know. I don't know. But it lasted for 7 years, so what the heck, you know? I mean, there must have been something to it.
Some of those 80s shows didn't age well as well. I think I was watching, what was one of those 80s shows I was trying to rewatch, and I just couldn't. Oh, Moonlighting doesn't hold up at all.
I loved it in college.
Where can you get that now? Do they have that yet on IMDb? Because they're getting a lot of good shows on IMDb, by the way. Meaning the whole run of the shows rather than a couple of seasons. And who cares? You know?
I kind of watch them through an app on my Xbox, so I'm not sure. I'm not sure how legal it is, but I still get them. So and I think I watched a couple of Miami Vice, and they didn't hold up very well either. So okay,
I love Miami Vice. I still love them boys to this day. I've been doing other than Asher's new bike and BMXing. What did I watch? Oh, I'm into my phase of serial killers. I watched the Henry Lee Lucas. Documentary, and it's in parts, but oh my God, I didn't even know how much he was hanging out in North Texas, you know, where he deposited bodies literally all over the place around here. And then I watched The Night Stalker. People were freaking out about that, about Ramirez. And
oh yeah,
the new Night Stalker or the old one?
It's a series about the Night Stalker.
Oh,
the serial killer Night Stalker.
And I noticed that a lot of people that watched American Horror Story did not know that Ramirez was an actual serial killer, which I kind of thought that was kind of funny because they're y'all young. They don't, you know. But I watched Plan 9 from Outer Space in its entirety. I actually did it.
Oh.
Did you like the shower curtains?
God, poor Bela Lugosi. I'm glad his part was really minuscule.
I think he died in the middle of making that. So
he died in the beginning.
He died in the beginning.
Well, his wife's chiropractor played his part.
That's right.
Oh my God.
That's why, like, the chiropractor's like 6 foot. I think, like, Bela Lugosi was something like 5'9" or something.
Oh my God, Ed Wood, though. I mean, like, Glenn or Glenda, all of them are just, I just can't stop watching them sometimes when they I get on a tear and I'll sit there.
Do you know something? You gotta hand it to him, though. I mean, he made such bad movies. I don't think he ever made a good one, but he still was able to get them financed. I mean,
it's such a cult thing now. You know, it's almost like Eraserhead. If, you know, Edward was around, he would love Eraserhead. I still don't understand what I watched.
Well, if you think of the fact, it was really kind of brilliant. He had the cups and saucers as the flying saucers in Plan 9 from Outer Space. Those were teacups.
Yeah, and you couldn't almost see those strings. I was like, there goes one. But what else? Oh, I've been watching. I'm up to episode 6. I don't think they did episode 7 of The New Stand on CBS All Access, even though I'm not getting it on CBS All Access. But and I've been keeping up with most of the stuff on Discovery of Witches on Netflix. I'm really liking that. And then there was that really graphic one I watched that, because the horror fans were all talking about it, was that Serbian film, Not for the Faint of Heart. All I'm going to say about that. But other than that, just doing that family thing, waiting for spring to come and tornado season. But that's not it.
I hear you. You know, Robin Williams, actually, we've been watching a whole bunch of, we've been binging on Robin Williams movies. And
I loved all of his movies.
He did a couple of sci-fi. He did a movie called The Final Cut,
that's really good.
Unbelievable. I was very impressed. I really was.
He was a very well-studied actor, regardless of his comedy. I mean, very look versatile. At, was it Good Morning Vietnam? That was mostly ad-lib, that script.
That was wonderful.
Yeah. The thing about Robin Williams, he was good if he had a director who could control him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Otherwise he'll go into a shtick. And sometimes I think it was Dead Poets Society. It's like you're watching, it's like, God, he's really good. And all of a sudden he starts going into his John Wayne shtick and all the other stuff. And it's like, oh my God, just pull back a little bit.
They interviewed one. There's a biography of him, which we saw on Amazon Prime, I believe. And it's called Robin's Song. It's either on Amazon Prime or Netflix.
It's just so heartbreaking. It's
terrible. Oh God, it came out last year. And it talked about his final. And of course, he passed from Lewy body dementia. And nobody knew about it when he died. Nobody knew that he passed from that. They figured that out in the autopsy. And they were talking. And the director of one of his last films, I don't remember. It may have been Night at the Museum 3, but the director said that, well, this was somebody you had to, when he was in the mood, you just had to give him his head. You had to let him go, and then you did what you needed to do. You edited what you had to take out. But his attitude was, don't control the guy, because if you try to control the guy, forget about it. You're not going to get anything. That was the way. But we binged. That's another suggestion that I have. If anybody has to stick home with all this nonsense, binge Robin Williams movies, especially Awakenings, which was such a wonderful movie. Oh God, about him playing a doctor in the Bronx hospital, and he comes upon L-Dopa to alleviate patients who have been in catatonic comas for years. It's a wonderful movie. It really is.
I loved him in the Dead Poets Society, and Good Will Hunting. Sure. Oh my God,
Good Will Hunting is another.
My favorite is The World According to Garp.
I love it. Cloris Leachman was in that.
Mm-hmm.
Rest her.
Cloris Leachman just passed away too. She just passed
that's
away.
Another loss for.
Cicely Tyson passed away. Just passed away.
I always think of her as Fraud, you say it. What was her name?
Oh, in Young Frankenstein.
Young Frankenstein.
Rob Luther?
Yeah. She was just, that was probably one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. I could still watch it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she worked up until the day she went as well. I mean, she was in American Gods.
Yeah.
First Leachman.
She was the third season.
Give her a lot of credit. Dick Van Dyke is still around, thank God. Let's hope he sticks around.
I think he'll still be alive, and unless he does his Cockney accent, that might be the death of him.
The Cockney.
A jolly holiday with Mary.
Yeah. Hello, Mary. Top of the holiday, isn't it? It's a jolly holiday with Mary, it is.
That's all we need.
Chim chim tree.
That's right. That's what we got to do.
And everyone in England always cringes.
I bet.
And I got to say, for the local New York fans, and I just heard Sonny Fox, who was known in the 60s as being a child talk show, a kiddie show host, and it was marvelous. And he did Wonderama and Just for Fun. I remember growing up on those when I was a kid. He just died at 96 of COVID-related issues. And so may he rest in peace. But he was a marvelous guy. He contributed a hell of a lot to the industry. And he became a director later on. He started the Tomorrow Show, actually, with Tom Snyder. He was a very he was VP of Children's Programming, I think, at one of the networks for a while. He was a very sharp cookie. So it is what it is.
Yeah, it certainly is. Okay, we're now going to cut into the wash with our very own soap announcer. So take it away.
Welcome to the Literary License Podcast Retrospective of Soap. And this month on Soap, we learn that Jody checks into the hospital for a sex change operation, meets Barney Gerber, a heart patient in the next bed, receives an offer from Nurse Nancy to cure Jody of his desire to be a woman. Bert tells his therapist about how and why he killed Mary's first husband, Johnny Dallas. The therapist reassures Bert that it was self-defense and not murder. Jody is visited by Dennis, Corinne, Eunice, Benson, and Danny in disguise in the hospital. Corinne tells Jody that she's in love with Father Tim. Mary and Jessica meet for lunch, where they happen to see Chester and Claire kissing. Jessica and Mary conclude that there's a curse on the family. Danny's pursued by the Godfather to the Campbell House, but Danny's rabbi disguise fools them. Bert is finally cured of his impotency after his therapy session, but Mary is too overwhelmed by the family's other problems to get in the mood. Father Tim asks God what he should do about Corinne. Jody attempts suicide after Dennis backs out of his relationship with him, but Barney tries to cheer him up with his views of his unpredictability of happiness. Bert and Mary are both nervous about their first sexual encounter in 6 months. Jody promises that he won't try again to commit suicide after the hospital calls the Campbells about his suicide attempts, and he abandons the sex change operation. Corinne tells Peter that she'll kill him if she ever catches him cheating. Jessica fronts Chester about his affair with Claire, admits to having had an affair of her own when Chester won't take her seriously, walks out on Chester when he flatly denies ever having been unfaithful. Jessica comes home after staying out all night, warns Chester that she won't tolerate any further infidelity. Jody checks out of the hospital, is corralled by Nurse Nancy into going on a date, says goodbye to Barney with a promise of staying in touch. Jessica visits Peter and catches Mrs. Fane hiding in the bathroom. Again, threatens to kill Peter for cheating on Corinne. Bert gives Jody advice about his date with Nurse Nancy. Corinne tells Father Tim that she has caught Peter with another woman. Peter is murdered by an unseen assailant. Bert and Mary finally get their sex life going again, but Bert finds Peter dead in the shower the next morning. The Tates and the Campbells are informed by Chief of Police Tinkler, who occasionally risks Mist refers to himself as Piece of Caliph Tinkler, that they're all suspects in Peter's murder. Jody reveals that he didn't go out with Nurse Nancy after all. Chester finally realizes that it feels like to be cheated on, learning that Jessica's affair had been with Peter. The Tates and the Campbells speculate about which of them murdered Peter. Eunice tells Congressman McCallum that he is her alibi for the night of the murder, is almost caught by McCallum's alcoholic wife Marilyn with the congressman in the bathroom. Corinne is arrested by Chief Tinkler for the murder of Peter. Corinne is taken to jail. Bert tries to recreate the scene of Peter's murder. Danny, tired of running from the mob, plans to confront Mr. Lefkowitz, the crime kingpin. Randolph and Ingrid, the brother of Jessica Tate and Mary Campbell, and his pal Lamour, respectively learn of Corinne's arrest. Danny breaks into Lefkowitz's house and meets his sex-starved daughter, Elaine. Jody is given motherly advice by Mary about rebuilding his life. Tinkler is surprised at Ingrid's appearance at the jail, and surprises further to learn that she is Corinne's real mother. Corinne is visited by Jessica. Chester and Ingrid is devastated to learn that Ingrid is their natural mother. Bert continues to examine the evidence about Peter's murder. Danny decides to no longer live his life in disguise. The Campbells are interrogated by Heinrich Himmler, a private detective hired by Ingrid. Mary explains about Randolph and Ingrid, and Jessica blames herself for all the family's problems, is arrested after evidence found clears Corinne and implicates her. And that and more on our episode of Soap.
Okay, welcome back to the rinse cycle of our show where we just don't make me laugh. What? Stop.
I'm laughing.
Cut it. What'd you do?
I'm laughing already.
Okay. Welcome back to the rinse cycle where we discuss the good, the bad, and the downright comedy and drama of Soap. So, Tom, what'd you think about these episodes?
I think the writing was brilliant. I mean, I really did. I was... The first thing I want to bring up, and I can't help the parallels to Dark Shadows for those people who have never watched Dark Shadows that are listening to this and saying, well, what kind of parallels can there be between a show that makes parodies of normal soap operas and Dark Shadows, which was a very campy attempt to put vampires, werewolves, and everything. But for one thing, Sheriff... What was his name? Sheriff Clinker? Sheriff
Tinkler.
Sheriff Tinkler. Sheriff Tinkler. Sheriff Tinkler has got to be a distant relative to Sheriff Patterson on Dark Shadows for those people who, because neither of them could really solve cases. And I think that really, you could have put Dana Elkar in Sheriff Tinkler's role, and I think he would have been the same way. But I mean, can you imagine that's episode 13, where everybody is suspect for the murder of that guy that was fooling around on Corinne and had the affair.
Peter Campbell.
Yeah, and so he's like everybody. I mean, for God's sakes, you could have a seventh grade kid come on and say, "I think everybody did it." That's the kind of job that he did. But it was really hilarious.
That was one of the funniest episodes, because they were singling out Benson. He goes, "Well, you not only are you black, but you're the butler." So the butler always did it. You know.
It was very funny. The funny thing was that on YouTube, you could get every episode on YouTube except that one. It was banned in the U.S.
It was probably people thought that maybe it was too, out there racially. And then, I mean, they weren't saying the word homosexual. You're not allowed to say that anymore, I guess. But I mean, let's face it. He was singling out Jody because, he was a homosexual that might have been in love with Peter and he was spurned or something. And then you have the black butler. So, which I thought was hysterical, but, think at the time, you couldn't probably get away with it now, but it was hysterical.
But, the funny thing about this is with comedy, I think that comedy should always have free reign. And especially in something like soap. to be honest, you know, whether it's the sex change operation or some of the other stuff that we hit, they are hitting some serious topics at a time when these topics were taboo on television.
Right.
That's right.
And they do, and they do it with humor, but with the humor comes empathy. And with the empathy comes understanding, and with the understanding comes these heart-wrenching, you know, you're laughing, and all of a sudden, like, you know, we get it with, like, Jody is going to have a sex change operation, and no one's making fun of him having a sex change. They're making fun of the people who weren't able to understand it. Right. They're the ones that's who they're making fun of, not Jody having a sex change, of the people who didn't understand it.
Like Bert.
And as they come to an understanding of it, then what you have is then when Jody gets spurned by his boyfriend, and so the boyfriend,
he's going to marry a girl because he's a big football player.
And then Jody decides to commit suicide. And then what you get is you're laughing, and not about Jody's suicide, but you get, you know, Barney Gerber in there talking about the pursuit of happiness.
And it's like your heart breaks. I love him.
That was such a well done.
And that's what the show is so fantastic about. It's like you're laughing. And I mean, this is Susan Harris.
But it's bittersweet at the same time.
Yeah. But I mean, we got to give kudos to Susan Harris. I mean, she did this. Golden Girls is another another example of another one of her shows that she did, and Empty Nest, of course. And her shows is like, you know, she hits hard topics all the time, but with humor and understanding and empathy.
Because you did empathize with Jody. You know, you kind of forgot that he was gay, and this is just a human being that's confused and hurt and was going to donate everything of his life to change for somebody else he loved, and that person, you know, probably didn't deserve him anyway.
And Jody probably was the first gay character on American television.
I honestly can't remember. Well, no, Archie Bunker had one of his friends on. He was a Mike's, big burly guy.
It was Mike's. Was it related to Mike?
He was a friend of Archie's that he knew a long time ago, and he was like a big union man. But he was gay, and Archie just kind of lost it over that. But I do remember that.
But this is a main character.
Yeah,
this wasn't someone in for like an episode of the week or something like that.
Right.
The main character. So I mean, it was quite a stand forward for his time.
It is.
But then even if you look at the jokes on that made at Benson's expense, Benson always has the last word and the last laugh.
Yep.
So Benson always has one up on them, being the only black butler on the show. And he really is one of the, when you think about it, you know how he is towards Jessica. He really actually cares about her. And he's always busting Tate's balls all the time.
So the kid,
he's
likes
cheating
the kid.
On her. You know,
but while we're at it, you talk about Barney Gerber, who was played by Harold Gould, and Harold Gould gave a great performance.
Yes, he did.
There were actually two characters that kind of parodied the Jewish experience, and Barney Gerber was one of them. And Barney portrays the older, wiser Jewish guy who has gone through the ironies of life, which is so endemic to the Jewish experience. And he talks about the fact that, you know, that he's had a few wives and they've all died on him, and how he's and he relates the story in a beautiful dialogue, mm-hmm. or more of a monologue really with Jody, as to, you know, getting over it, when he says, and one, you know, you're so sad, and one day you decide to smile. Yeah. You don't know why you're smiling.
But he also has empathy, and he's an older person back in the 70s, and he doesn't care that Jody's a
He accepted him. He accepted him completely. And in fact, that was what helped Jody to pull through, because, you know, Jody
somebody
tells
said
him
the right things to him in his biggest time of need, which is, you know. But then on the other hand, you have all the family coming in. You got Danny coming in as, who was he, the sheik? The rabbi, else did he come in? And then you had he was this poor guy, Mr. Gerber's watching this family come in, and they're all batshit crazy, you know? And then you got Eunice, who's having a fling with the congressman, you know, and they're just all nuts. And he's like totally taking all this in and enjoying every minute of it. This is probably the best 6 weeks of his life when Jody moved into that room with him, because he was there for heart problems.
Kind of hope, because they did exchange phone numbers on the toilet paper as they were leaving. So hopefully they will keep in touch. The other Jewish portrayal was, as you mentioned, Danny as the Orthodox Jewish rabbi.
I kept thinking of you every time he talked.
Thank you very much. This is the thing you got to remember when you are talking yeah. like this, you know, and he was trying to do, at least I can do that a lot better than him, my grandmother.
I love Danny. I think he's a riot.
But I talk like this. This is my grandmother. This is what you're mm-hmm. listening to. But anyway, he was also, and it was a great scene between Bert is like, here's the money, you know. We know you're looking for trees in Israel. Here's the money. It was hilarious. They managed somehow to pull that off without it being anti-Semitic.
Right.
And I think that's emblematic or symptomatic of excellent writing.
She was really smart, Susan Harris was. I mean, anything she wrote was gold, basically. At least my opinion.
And a woman working in Hollywood in the 70s.
Yeah.
Must have not been easy either.
No, and it was a hit show.
But what was brilliant about that, and getting back to the Jews, so here you had two sides of the Jewish experience. The Barney Gerber's wise, sad, but I've learned something because God tests us Jewish experience, which is the humane, and that balances out the Orthodox. What do you think I'm here for? I'm here for a little money. Give me a little money. And that's the more mm-hmm. comedic.
The funny thing is he starts going on his tirade, so then people don't want to even question who he is anymore. They just want to get away from him.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Like Himmel, like Heinrich Himmel.
William Daniels. William Daniels. I was surprised when I saw William Daniels, who played the German guy from St. Elsewhere.
Yeah, oh my God, that was just hysterical too. That but was he was also getting engaged. He was engaging on, you know, the black butler and the homosexual, mm-hmm. you know, and then Bert, you know, because Bert, I mean, he is the funniest thing on that. I mean, I can't stop laughing at him. He always is so nervous and gets upset.
He's trying to figure out
who killed his son, you know, and then he starts at the very end to start thinking he's invisible.
I mean, our listeners should actually listen to the Jennifer Salt interview that we did with her.
Yeah, she said
that
maybe we should when you
worked with him, it was really difficult because you never knew what he was going to do.
Right.
Yeah, and it's like if you had a scene with him, you just had to be fasten your seatbelts and you just had to go with it. Sort of thing.
And it would make people laugh a lot. There were several takes, I believe she said, because it's sort of like, you know, Harvey Korman and Tim Conway, they just let him roll and you laugh because of their laughing, you know, that's the kind of humor people need these days, really.
I'm actually surprised in soap that there's not a lot more corpsing going on. And corpsing is basically where people are trying not to laugh because
they got the canned laughter.
But I'm talking about like if you're filming something and then something goes off and all the other actors have to make sure that they stay in character and not break character.
Well, they did,
and it must have been very, very hard at times.
They did.
It would have been difficult. I mean, if you had to work with Bert's character, I mean, I laugh just watching him get upset, like when he can finally have sex again, and then she can't because she's too upset. Because Bert was just for people that don't remember, Bert killed Mary's husband by accident. Technically, and he couldn't, you know, have sex with her because he was all worked up about that. And then he found out it really wasn't his fault. So Bert could have sex again. But when they finally can have sex, something happens and they can't have sex or she's not in the mood. What was it that put her out of the mood? I can't remember now.
I think they finally did have.
And they wanted to have a celebration. He wanted to have a party. And she's like, Bert, you can't tell everybody what the party's for.
That's right. That's right.
That's when he finds out he wants to go invite Peter over. And that's when he finds out that he was bludgeoned, shot, strangled. What else? Bludgeoned, shot, strangled, and stabbed. And they kept in that order. Bludgeoned was the last one.
There were five of them. I remember that.
So Bert decides to recreate the scene with the bathtub. He brings it over to the house in pieces. And he starts shooting, stabbing, bludgeoning, and whatever he's doing in his basement, which blows up.
He's already the amateur cop. The other thing, I thought it was a very interesting conversation between Jessica and the sister about the family being cursed.
Cursed, yeah.
And so they're talking about, you know, the soap idea of the curse is that here you got a family that everybody's having affairs with everybody else, mm-hmm. and somebody murdered somebody, and that's their idea of a family curse, going again to Dark Shadows. where the Curse on Dark Shadows are the vampires, werewolves, and so forth. And you know, so but what I think it does show is that the idea of a family being cursed is endemic to the soap opera experience.
Well, if you watch any soap operas like General Hospital, Young and the Restless, all that, you can see, I mean, it's just human trials and just getting through life
Knots Landing.
I know, it's just all drama.
Did they ever verbalize it the way they did it on soap? The family being
Making fun of it though too.
Right, but they talk about it, and that's my point. And they did the same thing on Dark Shadows. But the point is that they are two different kinds of family curses. And it brought that to mind that the curse is really a very ubiquitous thing. I mean, it happens in all the soap operas. Mm-hmm. And it's just the way soap handles it is to make fun of it. The way Dark Shadows handled it was to make it really pseudo-serious. And people got a kick out of that, too. But nonetheless, and I'm sure that was accidental. But nonetheless, there's a lot of good stuff. And of course, Ingrid Svensson gives me opportunity to do my
speaking. I love her. She's such a wise ass.
I don't do that very often. Gotten Himmel from Farmer's Daughter. Remember Farmer's Daughter in '60s with Ingrid Stevens?
Yeah.
So that was really something.
And then we have Father Tim, because that was like on Days of Our Life. He had characters that were in love with the priest and they, you know, get it on. And they realize, no, I can't be with you anymore. So they're really making fun of that one.
And stuff with Corinne. And
was that Father Tim decides to leave Corinne because he's going on a religious retreat to get away from her. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. because she's like the bane of his existence at this point. Because Corinne is really pretty. She really is.
They all are. I mean, for God's sakes. I mean,
oh, yeah. Everybody. All the women were attractive on the show.
Still can't get over Jessica. I mean, she wasn't a young woman, but she's really sexy.
She had a young man in her life for a long time. God love her.
Well, she went on. She went from this to like Who's the Boss, didn't she? She was on that show.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And then she's in a fantastic movie with Lucas Haas called The Lady in White, which is a fantastic ghost story that I
heard. Oh, really? I've never heard of that.
That was Stoker? Made. Is that Stoker?
Nope, it's an original story, but it was made. It's an independent film that was made in upstate New York.
Oh, really? And Lady in White? Why haven't I heard of this?
Yeah, with Len Karu's in it as well.
Mm. Oh, Catherine Hellman. Mm.
Yeah, wow. Fantastic.
Watch I'm it. Always looking for something different to watch. That's cool. Yeah.
We'll probably be covering it in our podcast.
Oh, okay. Year. Well, it's something I can look up, that's for sure. I've never heard of that one.
Brilliant film.
I actually thought that 13, the reason I thought 13 was banned may have been because they were talking about the soiree they had in the beginning of the episode, Bert and Mary. I think it was in the beginning of that episode, and they were talking about that because I can't believe that was banned because of the...
I'd have to look it up, but I really do think it was because of the racial...
Yeah, it's probably the racial, because you're not allowed to say stuff like that anymore.
You can't say a lot of stuff anymore. So.
And the thing is, if you take it out of context, and I imagine if you look at it out of context, then it probably would, people would probably find it upsetting. But if you look at it in context, it's not upsetting.
It's silly. It's on that episode is on Daily Motion, which I was just joking with Keith because motion in Britain is a bowel movement. So
like Daily Motion. I always find movies there that I can't otherwise find or pirate. So
it's a much better feed than Daily Motion, by the way. Also, it's almost perfect. You know, if you're looking at it, whereas in YouTube, it's kind of a poorer quality. I mean, you could still look at it, but it's the screen is enlarged. You're really not seeing the whole. You know, you're unable to see the entire screen that you would have in normal. But in Daily Motion, you're able to see everything, and it's so clear and vibrant. Mm-hmm. It's really something. So, but that was the only episode from that block that was on.
I thought that was one of the funniest. That in 16 with Heinrich Himmel. I mean, every time that guy started talking, he goes, yeah, he goes, you spit a little bit every time you talk, you know, but I mean, he was just, that was a damn funny episode too. But I did notice, Keith, what did you think about when Chester finally gets caught cheating, and Jessica actually knows about it. And then he finally feels the same way after he finds out that she was screwing around with Peter. Do you think maybe Chester had his comeuppance and he might behave himself in the future?
I think Chester, we have a saying over here that a hooker never changes her underwear. And I got a feeling Chester is a bit like that.
Leopard doesn't change.
Well, that's one way of putting it, I guess.
Yeah. A slapper never changes her knickers, is what they say over here.
Right.
but I think Chester's always going to be like that. But the thing is, I mean, what was quite interesting is that thing where he deflects it, doesn't he? Because he's like the king of deflection. He just deflects everything off.
Yeah.
Right.
What I love about Jessica is that she always knows anyway. She always plays dumb, but she's not as dumb as everyone thinks she is ever.
No.
She's more on the ball than most of the other characters on the show, but the way that she betrays it is very smart. Because then it's like you're listening to her and all of a sudden it's like she'll say something, it's like, oh, she knows, you know what I mean? And all this other stuff, you know, she refuses, you know, well, I mean, it says like in the beginning, you know, this is Jessica Tate, you know, she wants her life, you know, she wants her life to be a living musical.
Yeah.
Kind of like that sort of thing.
She wants to but she needs to dress it with flowers. Yeah.
Yeah. But she always looks for the bright side of things. You know,
Cameron Hellman really does portray her well. The scene you're talking about, I mean, she was really hurt when she saw the two of them kissing in the restaurant out in the open. And Mary is, the sister's right there trying to
put her face in a plate so she can't see across the room.
But she's just now, but there is a kind of a little bit of a hypocrisy on both sides. I mean, Jessica's had the affair with the young guy.
Right.
He's having the affair. And then when they confront each other, but he is truly more of a hypocrite than she is. Because he's playing along with it, like, you know, when she does tell him about her affair, he's trying to make it seem like, how dare you?
And I know. That's what he means by deflecting. He, you know, makes it sound like he's so prim and proper.
He's a hypocrite. Yeah.
He's such an idiot.
he's a hypocrite.
But you have to say that all children are the same way. I mean, they're all like screwing around. I mean, Elaine does.
Elaine with a congressman, Corinne.
Yeah,
well,
Corinne.
I mean, they don't really. I might have missed this because I've since slept since the first few episodes. Did Corinne actually sleep with the priest, or they got feelings?
She's just chasing after him. But to be honest, I mean, but she's supposed to be with Peter anyway,
right?
She's still chasing after Tim, even Father Tim, even though she's supposed to be with. I know that Peter's sleeping around,
right?
But at the same time, she's supposed to be with Peter in a committed relationship because she tells Peter, if you get caught sleeping around, they'll kill you.
Yeah. But meanwhile, everybody's going to kill him.
But she's still chasing after Father Tim, though, isn't she? So
it's funny because Peter's got his bedroom. He's got a door here and a door out the other side of his bedroom, you know? So everybody goes in and out like a, you know.
You got the shower there and they use the shower.
And then you got the shower.
And he's having an affair with a blind woman and telling everyone that he's a tennis.
And who was the other woman he had an affair with? I recognize
Nita,
Mrs. Fine.
Talbot, Mrs. Fine, and she's just a New York accent, you know, that kind of thing. But
she doesn't look like one that wants to be spurned either.
I think one of the funniest scenes when you talk about Bert and Sid Caesar when he's choking the puppet. Because he's just so annoyed at the noxiousness, and he finally buys it for so long. He's saying, "You're not real. This is my son's got an illness, and this puppet is not." But he finally buys into it and treats the puppet like he's a real person.
Well, I find it funny how they start accepting the puppet and they just start talking to him like he's a regular person, and he's a total wise ass.
When he's choking him, the puppet's head goes all the way up. He's like, ah! That was brilliant. It was hysterical. It was friggin' hysterical. And if the sheriff could only have caught him choking the puppet, he probably would have arrested him.
But you know why Bob's annoying, don't you? He's the only one speaking the truth.
Well, also Benson. Benson also speaks the truth.
Benson's so nonchalant. He's so good at being a wise ass.
Benson is more coming from the, you know, from the, you know, I'm black, but I'm not so black. And I know what the hell's going on. And I'm very wise to this. I'm very, very street smart. And I'm very, very blah, blah, blah. But the puppet is just a... The puppet is just a prick.
Yeah, he really is.
To be honest, I actually see myself in everyday life as Bob.
Yeah, I can honestly see you every time I talk to you.
I'm like the living incantation of Bob. I think
I'm sure your colleagues
always stating the obvious, like really, sort of. But you know what's also great about the show. I mean, you know, is even when the speaking, they always make sure that they're always doing a little bit of business. You know, all the actors are doing a little bit of something, like when Bob and Chuck are reading.
Right.
Book, you know, it's like just little things like that are always going on as well. So it's not just, you know, it could work as a radio drama, but at the same time, it can, I mean, it's so visual to watch as well. And it's so, you know, humanistic as well. That's what I like about soap. It's like you just, and I can't say that there's never, so far there hasn't been an episode where I've actually just laughed or smiled all the way through it.
Well, then we're also introduced to Randolph in episode 15. That's the brother of Jessica and Mary Campbell.
I was disappointed in him, actually.
I was expecting a little more out of that myself. What? Yeah. Okay, what was his name? Bernard Fox, is that who it is?
Yeah, the one who played Randolph?
Yeah, I was expecting a little more out of it. I thought he was going to get some better lines, I guess, maybe.
You thought he was going to be Dr. Bombay on the show? You know,
yeah, maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
Or something a bit more peculiar because, I mean, even so, because we were introduced to him, then we don't see him again up until, you know, I don't know if we'll see him later.
Yeah, we just
Mary tells us a story about their peculiar brother, Randall. Yeah. And it's like, well, he wasn't that peculiar.
But they're not Ingrid supposed to peculiar. Give details. Nine.
Yeah. So, no details. So I guess, who knows? I mean, maybe we'll get more Randall in later episodes. But at the moment, it's like, well, he wasn't that peculiar. He's actually just typically English to me, sort of thing.
Well, that would be peculiar to an American, probably, because, you know.
Yeah. Why is he speaking with an English accent when they're in Connecticut?
Yeah, but, you know. But we do find out that, you know, now that Corinne is in jail, they read the paper. And now we find out, here we go with the typical soap opera, that Ingrid is really Corinne's mother. And they were married. Well, they weren't to get married because the peculiar brother was the father of Corinne. So everybody knows about this deep, dark secret, except probably Bert. So the two sisters know about it and the brother knows about it. And so she comes back, you know, and she wants to love on Corinne. It's like, who is this woman? And she finds out that she was adopted. And I guess when they send her away to Ecuador, and she hates Ecuador, they made her live in Ecuador.
I know. And she's like, yeah, it's a beach. It's
everything.
It's a paradise. You know, piranhas in the pool. Anacondas in the backyard.
She literally hates everything.
She goes, and I'm looking to get bed sheets from Bloomingdale's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But here she is. I can understand Corinne being so upset when, you know, when Ingrid comes out, when Svensson comes over to, I am your mother. You know, now it's so good to see with you again after all these years. And she's like, huh? I got a mom with a Swedish accent. You know, I mean, that it does seem a little, weird. To say the least, but it's very good comedic. It's very good comedic, and I think that was done very well. And she is so pissed off. Corinne is so pissed off at her parents for not letting her know. And he said, we were trying to protect you. We didn't want you know, that kind of thing, which is so. There was such a lame excuse. He said something like, "Well, we never thought you would find out."
Yeah,
which is even more.
There are people that don't want their kids to find out they're adopted.
I think we also have to look at like in the 70s. I mean, this is before the court case. This is where the law changed. Where basically, you know, now there's full disclosure now. Yeah. Back then, I mean, you know, if you adopted someone, the case files were closed and no one could get into them.
You adopted them. That was it.
Right. For now, I mean, I guess it's kind of funny looking back at that. I guess you probably could have hid it really if you wanted to, because no one would have known.
Right.
Though if you are raising your brother's child, I mean, eventually it probably would have come out anyway, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine Randolph probably would have showed up for a family funeral and then it would come out sooner or later, you know what I mean?
Or someone would have needed a kidney, you know, something like that.
Yeah, sort of thing.
So that's usually
I mean, what's also good is that we also get introduced to Dinah Manoff.
Yes. Oh, my God. Well. Yes.
That New York accent was nice. You interview her recently, Keith?
We will be interviewing. That interview will be up in the next, either this month or next month. So.
Ah, okay.
But Dinah Manoff, I mean, you know her from like Empty Nest, Grease. She played Marty in Grease, and she was Marty. She did a lot of Neil Simon stuff as well.
Maraschino, like cherry. she was great in that. And she was great in Grease, especially. What was the name of the, I can always forget him. Was it Johnny Fontaine?
Yeah, Johnny Fontaine.
And he's just like a total child molester, you know?
I know.
Oh my God, that was great.
Well, I mean, was he? Because I mean, let's face it, when you watch Grease, they all look like they're in their 30s anyway.
Well, they're supposed to be kids in their senior year, okay?
Yeah, but they all look like they're in their 30s. I mean, Rizzo looked like she was in her 50s. But I mean, it's good to see Elaine, and I'm glad we're going to be seeing more of her, because I know what happens with her character, and this character is a huge, fantastic,
and it's hugely funny. Considering I skipped ahead by accident, I totally forgot all these episodes. I mean, the good thing about going back to seeing this is seeing how much the world has changed. Mm. You know, I don't even know if you could get away with this right now. I mean, could you? You think?
You know, the thing is, I think that you could get away with it, really. I mean, the thing is, if people would lighten up a little bit.
Right.
And because, you know, I do think that soap, with some of the messages that we've seen so far, I think help progress the American ideals a lot pretty far, you know, and made things a little bit more accessible. I mean, you know, I think, you know, homosexuality started becoming very acceptable. And then, of course, the AIDS crisis happened in the 80s, and that kind of set everything back again.
Right.
But up until that point, I mean, you know, you started seeing a lot more homosexualism. Hollywood started to make a couple more movies after Soap came out. There's a couple TV movies of the week. We had Robert Reed on Medical Center getting a sex change that came out after this.
And Robert Reed was gay.
Well, that sex change thing just started getting, you know, I think the way that they had approached it with Jody, because that was starting to become a thing back then, you know, people starting to, you know, be able to, you know, live their life as they chose.
I mean, you know, I think the AIDS crisis in the 80s set everything back.
It did.
A lot. Yeah.
Ignorance set that.
And then everything had to be rebuilt after that. But I think, you know, Soap was, you know, part of the things that, you know, started that. I mean, Soap's going to cover a lot of different issues, whether it's, you know, diseases and stuff like this. And it did give people an understanding, and, you know, and
I think giving, you know, even through humor is so, you know, Leo Rostin did that with Jewish humor in the 30s and 40s with his books, specifically The Education of Hyman Kaplan and The Return of Hyman Kaplan. And I'm shocked that they never did any kind of movie on that. Hyman Kaplan was an immigrant that was attending a night school class, and he came up with these short stories, and Mr. Parkhill was the teacher, and he called him Mr. Parkhill, H-E-E-L, and the Yiddish accent and the stories and everything were humor, you know, it was humor through handling, humor in describing these tragic situations that you could really make fun of. And that's why I think in this block, not just with the Jewish characters, but they were really trying to inject humor to explain challenging situations that they were going through at the time. And mm-hmm. to make that not more understandable to the TV audience, get the TV audience to be more empathetic and to accept the fact that this was a part of life, maybe not a part of life that they wanted to deal with or face head on, but something that at least they had to be aware of. And I think soap was brilliant in terms of doing that.
You know, especially the anti-Semitic things, let's face it. Jews mm-hmm. have had their, you know, somebody asked, presented a question to me the other day ago, and seeing as we're on this anti-Semitic, whatever, and how they, you know, were making, you're humanizing gays and Jewish people and everything else. They made that movie. What was it called? Was it The Messiah? I think it was a Mel Gibson movie. And someone asked me the other day, I watched it. It was like a Jesus snuff film. I've always thought, because it was just uh-huh. brutal. And people are wondering if the directing and the writing was chosen that way to be, make you feel a little anti-Semitic when you left the theater because of all the brutal beating and everything else. And I kind of think it was kind of going that way. I don't know why I thought of that, because it was just a really recent conversation.
Well, on the other hand, the movie Skokie, which was one of Danny Kaye's only serious roles, which came mm-hmm. out in the late 70s. It was a brilliant, brilliant movie about the population of Skokie, Illinois, 40% mm-hmm. of which were Holocaust survivors.
Right.
And the chair of the, and this was based on a true incident, the local head of the American Nazi Party wanted to demonstrate in Skokie. And it was about the reaction of the community towards that. And you had the Anti-Defamation League, whose attitude was ignore them and they'll go away. And you had Danny Kaye, who was a concentration camp survivor with the numbers on his arm, mm-hmm. Who had a wife and a teenage daughter, and he had a small business there. And he was outraged because it had happened to him. He was in the concentration camp. His family died there. Mm-hmm. He watched his mother die, and now this guy is going to come in, and the Anti-Defamation League is saying ignore them. And it was a terrific in terms of the JDL, the Jewish Defense League, from way back when. Who hears about them now? But back then they were a very big organization. The beauty of soap is that while all these others,
they're humanizing people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you're right, well, with comedy and empathy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, look at even Bert's impotency. I mean, they tackle that issue.
What's that, Keith?
Bert's impotent.
Mm-hmm.
They tackle that issue.
You didn't hear anything about that back then, Dave. That's for mm-hmm. sure. You didn't talk about things like that.
That's right. In a sense, it was what All in the Family had its own sets of taboo breakers. And
right.
soap, apparently, that was before. But then soap, and All in the Family was going on at the same time as soap. But then soap came on and tackled another set of taboo breakers in the soap opera setup, whereas All in the Family was going after it from the standpoint of day to day and Archie's bigotry. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at everything through the eyes of Archie in All in the Family, who's the classical bigot. We can laugh at, and we can laugh at the stupidity of the bigotry, as Carol O'Connor portrayed it.
Right.
So we're looking at it for All in the Family. We're looking at it through one person. Soap, we're looking at it through the entire family and their interactions.
And everybody seems cool with it, like his cousins. They don't bat an eyelash at Jody getting a sex change, or they seem concerned about him. And, you know, like Eunice and Corinne.
I think if you want to really turn the world, I mean, the thing is, if you want to change the world and you want to get whatever you're trying to get across, you're better off doing it with humor, because if you do it through any other kind of sense, then what you're doing is preaching. And once you start preaching, people's minds tend to turn off.
Well,
look at Blazing Saddles. Blazing Saddles probably did more for racial tensions than most groups back then,
especially Mel Gibson. I'm Mel Gibson. Mel.
Mel Brooks.
Mel Brooks. Yeah. Mel Gibson. Mel Brooks. Who?
That was the other one.
But in Blazing Saddles, Braveheart. Mel Brooks,
who's got his own set of issues.
Mel Brooks, who played the Indian. Who Cleavon Little, the black sheriff, and he says, "Schmatzes, wasn't gay." You know, well, I have to tell you, when I saw that in Yiddish, where for the Schmatzes are for blacks, and let them go, that's all Yiddish. The idea of an American Indian speaking Yiddish,
yeah,
everybody in the theater, whether that I would watch that at,
no kidding,
Jewish or not, they laugh like crazy.
Gotta laugh. It's so funny.
They laugh like crazy. It's one of the best scenes. It's still remembered.
My favorite scene is, you know, where he's going, where are the white women at? Best scene ever.
And the funny thing about it is, like, when you say it out of context, it sounds really, it's like, oh my god, that sounds very racist, right, or whatever. But when you watch it within the confines of the movie, it all makes sense.
With the Ku Klux Klan with the smiley faces saying have a nice day on their sheets. I mean, it totally made fun of the assholes. I mean, that's why you gotta laugh at it.
And the thing is, that's what changed. I mean, I think that's the reason why things were
opened up a little more.
Oh, things opened up a lot more and people were accepting a lot more. And I think that now, because there's a lot of preaching going on, I think that people's minds are starting to close
up again.
And when you start, you start closing minds, and that's the problem. Is if you start,
there's no communication.
I think we need a show like Soap Again.
I think people would beat up on it because there's so many people that would be so upset or so offended, sadly.
You know, but I was reading somewhere about these people supposedly who are so upset, and they come to find out it's a very small minority, but they have very loud voices.
But the squeaky wheel gets the grease. That's the sad part.
You're right.
You know, and I think, you know, and unfortunately that, you know, if you get these people who are basically soapboxing whatever cause they're soapboxing without having the facts themselves.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, and I think we mentioned on the show quite a few times, you know, within, you know, regular conversation, you know, no matter where you stand on whatever issues, it's best to be centrally located, and you can lean one way or the other. But if you lean too far one way or the other, you're just going to fall over eventually. Mm-hmm. So best just to lean one way or the other on whatever thing is. And I think that's the problem at the moment. We got too many people leaning too far one way or too far the other way. And
there's no solidarity in a lot of ways.
But I think the majority of the people are pretty much standing in the middle, sort of thing, and leaning one way or the other. Depending on what they're talking about. So, but I think that, you know, but I think Soap was, you know, a groundbreaker. And I think, you know, and I mean, I'm probably the wrong person because I'm never offended by anything. I'm not offended by anything. You can call me anything in the street and I'm not offended. I don't care.
You have to remember that.
Unless it's someone I know and care about, and then they say something rotten to me, then I care. That's different. That's someone who knows me. But if it's like, you know, if it's mindless changes, I don't give a care.
We're always insulting each other on our phone calls or texting or whatever. We're not nice to each other, we're nice.
Precisely.
Pretty much piss off, you know?
I'm just trying to keep it real with you, Vicky.
I know. I'm trying to keep it real with you too, buddy.
Both of you succeed admirably.
It's part of a charm.
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 That's right. Your charm.
Now we've come to the brought to you by section where we will give our final thoughts on this block of episodes of Soap. So, Tom, what do you think?
I'm going to say it again, and I hope the fans will forgive me for reiterating. No, I just thought the writing was excellent. I thought it was even better. I think they're starting to hit their stride. Obviously, you know, whenever a show starts in the beginning, give them a little time to
get the ball going.
Yeah, give them a little slack to get into the scope of things. And Soap is funny to begin with. But here, my God, once again, Harold Gould's performance is Harold Gerber.
I loved him.
With Barney Gerber. And a very, 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 very poignant. I think they could have started a spinoff series based on that one character.
Yeah, I bet you they could have. He was the only voice of reason, really, in all the chaos.
They kind of did give him a spinoff, didn't he? Wasn't he end up being Rhoda's father?
Yeah. Well, that's different. I don't think that was a spin-off.
It wasn't a spin-off. Okay. But it was just another role that he played.
And Mary to Nancy Walker.
Yeah. But, so between him and the way they handled the Jewish experience on soap through that character, and also the Danny's rabbi, which I got a real kick out of.
That was funny, the rabbi thing.
Plus, you know, the rabbi versus the Arab, you know, that.
That was funny.
That was something in itself. And they had, and instead of a beard, they had him on, they had blackface on him, I think, to simulate the beard, which reminds me of Groucho Marx or something with his mustache over. But
you can see the back of his hair the whole time, though. They didn't make it so that you knew he had a, you knew that he was in, you know, a disguise, because they didn't really try to hide the back of his hair. That I thought was funny.
Exactly. So between that, the basic plot, of course, of who killed. Now it's turned into a whodunit. Who murdered? You know, who murdered the tennis guy? And something that's always, oh, you always see that in soap operas. Somebody gets killed, and there's a big investigation. Only this sheriff, who has. Oh, and there was a great line. He has a vacuum cleaner bag for a brain. I thought that was I thought that was wonderful. But this sheriff had a vacuum cleaner bag for a brain. I'll tell you that much. And the whole thing with that, the arrest of Corinne, and then she's released. And did we ever find out?
Then they arrest Jessica at the end.
Right. Why? But why did they let Corinne go? I don't know.
Because they went and they found all the evidence, you know, like where Jessica had it, like the gun was in her drawer. What else was the other thing? I can't remember. They were in stupid spots, you know, for dumb reasons.
But the other, that's also, we don't know why all the murder weapons. Why were the murder weapons found in Jessica's room? Well, it implies a setup.
Well, the gun she admitted was hers.
So definitely circumstantial, implies
a setup. So all of a sudden you see Chester have feelings for his wife a little bit. Chester's got a heart underneath that shitty exterior.
Well, I think there's guilt. I think there's real guilt. Because Chester knows that he's been fooling around with the whole town. But I think part of Chester's ethos is having his cake and eating it, as you so often see with partners that like to have affairs while still being married. You know, it gives them this assumption of false power to have their cake and eat it. And here it's been destroyed. And of course, remember the actor who plays Chester has been in a prior soap opera, so it's really funny. I don't remember whether it was The Guiding Light or whatever, but it was very funny to see that actor now do a parody of himself, literally. But I think in general, you actually do see in a flashback the guy who Bert killed.
You find out what happens with that. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. So there's some stuff that's resolved. They get rid of a character. They get rid of the tennis player, and now the rest of it is devoted to the whodunit. But it's very, very clever. Very, very clever. I think the writing, and of course, good acting too. And the guy who plays Bert is super. And choking the puppet. That to me,
choking the puppet, that was one of my favorite scenes too.
Funny scene. Funny.
Because they've humanized this piece of wood, and he's like part of the family. And everybody actually pays attention to him because he never shuts up.
I think it's great. And you know something? I was on Bert's side. I wanted to see the puppet get his.
I know. I wanted to strangle him. He was like, shut up, Bob. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
Humanizing him in your own mind after a while, just being the viewer.
I give the puppet chloroform, quite frankly. I think that the writing really, really was superb and helped to pull this through. That's my opinion.
What about yourself, Keith?
I think these episodes are very, very strong. I really like them a lot. I think that it's comedy gold. I like the way that they hit. I love the way that you got they hit things with comedy, but then you get these tender scenes that just break your heart. And I yeah, and anyone and I think that anytime that you can switch things that quickly from laughing to almost that you feel like you're choking up a little bit, I think is comedy genius. What I also like about soap is that if you grew up in the television, from the 60s and 70s,
TV
I love era. The way that we see Gordon Jump from WKRP. In
oh,
Cincinnati
I know. I the, love him. Every time I think of him, I think of the turkey drop.
Yeah. but it's like you're seeing all these like TV, Harold Gould from, I know him from Rhoda, sort of thing. And they just start popping in. It's a bit like when you watching Bewitched, which is another show that we cover, where you start seeing these old actors that you just used to love seeing in films and they're popping in. And that's what I like about soap. They always have got fresh characters coming in and out. And they always, but they're not just in there just to move the story along. They're there to give comedy genius as well. They're even getting great lines as well. Everyone on here always gets great lines. Yeah. And nobody's wasted, and I think that's one of what makes soap
a good thought. Nobody is wasted on the show at all. I mean, everybody has the one-liners just keep coming,
and they all have a chance. Everyone shines. Doesn't matter, even if they're only in like Billy. I think doesn't get used much in this block, but
they
even
keep
when
sending
he's
him
on,
out of the room.
But even when he's on, the few lines that he does have, they are zingers, what I mean? They're like boof.
And you can see William Daniels pre Saint Elsewhere and pre Knight Rider, but his ability to scream already and to be a dominating Nazi is really emphasized in some. It's kind of a prelude to Dr. Craig in Saint Elsewhere, who is the epitome of the the physician snob, and it was a great signature role for Daniel. He was also in Saved by the Bell. I didn't like him in that, but this role, and so I was surprised to see him. It was, and I agree with Keith. It's nice to see, these older character actors and people who've been around a while. And they just pop in for this stuff, and it's kind of like a fresh face, so to speak. And it's good stuff. It's good.
Yeah, I think Gordon Jump and all of, I mean, you just know these people. Well, especially if you grew up, in TV land era, I call it now, like us guys, mm-hmm. And you know all these people, you know who they are, and they do come in and do these character spots, and
they all look like they all look like they're enjoying themselves. That's another thing.
They probably were.
They're having fun.
Well, within that interview we had done, they did enjoy. There was camaraderie and lots of laughter. So
you see a lot of comedy series, and it's like, and they make you laugh, but they're there for the job sort of thing. But here, they just have this natural closeness, and this they all look like you can tell that they all enjoy coming to work and doing their job and doing
this chemistry.
Between them.
I gotta say, also no bloopers in this blog, guys.
No bloopers. That's too bad. I'm sure if there's a blooper, you're gonna catch it, Tom.
I'll take a close, but I didn't. But no bloopers.
They're probably there. You just missed it due to the COVID.
Well, they cut it out. That's possible. Yeah,
absolutely. He's going through a fog.
Yes, that's right.
I'm watching our shows on a fog.
I have it out. But I mean, when you consider my dear Dark Shadows, and I counted almost 100 bloopers in the last block, I couldn't go into it. I just went into a fraction of them.
We could have taken advantage of them on the Dark Shadows episode. We didn't.
A good job.
It's funny your expense if we didn't take the moment and seize it.
That's right. Yeah, carpe diem. You're talking
about. Yeah, yeah. But I thought they were strong block too, and I like how they like Keith was saying they do come out, and they with empathy. bring out all these things that were happening back then, like very homosexuality important. And sex change. And I remember the first time I heard sex change, I was a little girl. I didn't know. So what the hell are they talking about? Because usually when you saw that stuff, we got our news from the National Enquirer that time, you know, but they got the guy with the holding up the giant grasshopper, like he killed it. He's holding up the back of the legs. I got to find that picture. That it was about things that were going on and people were really upset about him, if you remember correctly back then. And I do think that it softened the blow and that she just brilliantly wrote the script to where, wow, I can empathize with Billy Crystal in this because, you know, he's a real human being. This is a human being. It's not a homosexual, you know, he's someone that feels just like we do. And he wants a normal, you know, relationship with somebody. And he was willing to sacrifice all for the shithead quarterback who went and married a woman on him anyway. So, you know. But
I mean, I remember like when Soap was on, what's the 1976?
77, 78.
77, I believe.
So that would have made me 12 years old. And I remember my mom used to let me stay up and watch it. And my mom had to explain to me what a sex change was.
Oh, my mother had to. I was pretty young, but it did start going into the 80s. And as I was older, I could enjoy it more because I understood what was going on.
But my mom let me stay up and watch. She said there was an important show that I must watch.
My mother wouldn't let me stay up and watch. What was that show? Laugh-In. I wanted to watch Laugh-In all the time. And my mother would not let me watch Laugh-In.
Oh, I don't know how you. Oh, that was so there for the time it was in. And it was so poignant. And Laugh-In was, it just worked. It just happened at the time because Laugh-In was just an accumulation of sick, bad jokes.
Yeah.
But because of the combination of Goldie Hawn. with the Socotomy and Here Comes Socotomy. The Judge and all that.
Charo.
These were household.
Tiny Tim. Yes. Who can forget Tiny Tim?
Uncle Al, the kiddie's pal. Hello, little friends. Hello, the Farkles.
Marty Johnson.
Oh my God. Those were the, you know what? I'm probably going to go put on Prime and watch some of those now just to be spiteful to my mother.
It's so iconic.
She's listening.
Richard Nixon getting on Laughing and saying, "Suck it to me."
Oh my God. How funny.
My mom
heard the music
that.
And I knew it was on and she wouldn't let me come downstairs. And I was so
she's probably afraid that it was good because they were always.
I was really little.
Taboo stuff. They did really very little. Light stuff, to be honest with you. My favorite joke was between Abby Lane and Dick Martin, and it was just so, but it was the way they did it. It was, you remind me of the sea. Why? Is it because I'm wet and wild? No, it's make me sick.
Doesn't take much to get off on a tangent with any of
us.
No,
it doesn't. No, forget it. We're nuts, you know, that kind of thing. It's not so much of a tangent because you're comparing.
Well, it's relevant.
It's right. You're comparing Soap to now. Laughing was a little earlier than Soap,
right?
But
I was just saying, my mother, I didn't understand things back then, like when Soap first came out. Sex change? What? I was probably 12 when it started.
Because we're the same age, aren't we?
So, yeah. He's a month younger than me. For everybody that hears his old freaking jokes, okay, a month younger. He likes to say generation Z.
But I wear it better than you do, babe. I wear it better than you.
Well, I don't know. There are some things Vicky wears a lot better.
Keith exfoliates a lot, okay?
I actually have no skin left because I exfoliate so much.
The deciduous forest, are you?
I'm just a human skull.
Yeah, the Brazilian wax boy.
I'm just a vagabond lover.
Okay. So this is the end of the Literary License Podcast retrospective of Soap season 1. episodes 9 to 16. Tune in next time where we're going to be doing episodes 16 to
17 to, well,
24.
17 to 24.
Yeah.
Yeah, we finished. We finished season one.
Yep. And also tune in next time where we'll be discussing our classic novel for the month of February, and that will be The Time Machine by H.G. Wells and the classic film of the same name from 1960, The Time Machine. We will be returning to SOAP for our next episode in April of this year, where we will be continuing the retrospective. And I screwed that up because I had the wrong numbers down. Get it? Okay. The Time Machine by H.G. Wells and a classic film of the same name from 1960. So we will be seeing you next time for our SOAP retrospective in April. So it's good night from myself. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, Tom.
Good night.
And we can't say good night to Jesse because he was probably at a toga party and blew us off. Because he's a college person now.
But he had a better time, too.
But don't forget to sign on for H.G. Wells, The Time Machine, and the movie of the same name. So have a pleasant good night. Stay safe and well.
Bye-bye.
When it's family, you forgive them for they know not what they do. When it's family, you accept them 'cause you have no choice but to. When it's family, they're a mirror of the worst and best in you, and they always put you to the test. And you always try to do your best and just pray for God to do the rest when it's family. Some are preachers, some are gay, some are addicts, drunks and strays, but not a one is turned away when it's family. Some are lucky, others ain't. Some are fighters, others faint. Winners, losers, sinners, saints, it's all family. And when it's family, you trust them and your heart's an open door. When it's family, you tolerate what you'd kill others for. When it's family, you love and hate and take and give some more. Somehow you justify mistakes, try to find some better way to solve the problems day to day in the family. You take the trouble as it comes and love more than anyone. Good or bad or indifferent, it's still family. You choose your lovers, you pick your friends, but not the family that you're in. Oh, they'll be with you till the end, 'cause it's family.